Recently, I've been looking back over Tony Blair's book on leadership, and I was interested by the chapter called The Plague of Ideology, because, much like me, Tony Blair rejects ideology, and he seeks to understand the world as it is and not as it ought to be, and his thinking is very Machiavellian. He's concentrated on power. He's, he seems to have absorbed elite theory. Whether he's read me or not, who knows? Probably not. Although I am told he was given the book. Populist delusion, that is. But this was an interesting chapter because I'm not going to read it all. I'm going to read a little excerpt from it where he actually starts praising Deng of the Chinese Communist Party. He starts off saying that ideology is bad, basically. That ideology is bad because it leads to really bad outcomes, it leads to dictatorships, yada, yada, yada. And he says socialism, if it's taken as an ideology, is bad. He says he's got some nice things to say about conservatism. He says conservatives traditionally have had some good things going for them, says Blair. They bring a perspective of realism to the process of governing. They're sceptical about utopian dreaming, because they understand it begins in excitement and ends in disappointment. They value hard work and self-improvement. While some on the left view patriotism and love of country contemptuously, conservatives rightly regard them as positive qualities. While I was growing up in politics, conservatives distrusted ideology. And then he continues, and then he starts to complain how the right has started to become quote-unquote ideological. That they've become ideological nationalists, as an example. Okay, and I'm not going to read through all of it, but then he starts to get on one of his favourite topics, which is populism of both the left and the right as being examples of quote-unquote ideology. He says, this is not a phenomenon confined to Britain. Around the world, we see traditional parties upended by new populist parties, or see mainstream parties increasingly captured by their fringe elements. There has been a hardening of politics around the left and the right. The two ends of the spectrum have much in common, says Blair. They both use the same inflammatory rhetoric. They both indulge in populism, which delights in exploiting grievances rather than dealing with them. They both demonize particular groups as standing in the way of the future they desire. For the left, it could be business. For the right, it could be immigrants. They thrive on confrontation and seek it out. They both find policy making, driven by evidence, analysis, deep thinking about difficult problems, as proof of what the country is up against, rather than necessary to provide solutions. Looking around the world and asking what works is seen as the refuge of the impure, the early signs of betrayal of the quote-unquote cause. The appeal is essentially to the public as victims of the quote-unquote deep state, the blob, the media barons, the billionaires, the financiers, 57 varieties of the enemy within. Complexity is an irritant. Facts are yours or mine, not just facts. The rejection of ideology is not the same as rejecting ideals, says Blair. I know that some would define ideology as something more akin to ideals, or at least a structured set of ideals. But for me, the distinguishing feature of an ideology is that it is a whole system analysis and solution. It is intrinsically dogmatic. For example, I would argue that the creation of public healthcare systems and welfare states was the product of ideals. They're compatible with different views about the economy, the market, the role of private capital, and they're motivated by the values of human solidarity, not by doctrine. Ideology, on the other hand, argues Blair, is a belief system in which the state, or it could be a religion or an idea, is not an answer, but the answer, singular, capital the answer. It is a lens through which every challenge is seen and solved. Ideals are more like principles, universal and non-exclusionary. Anyone in politics should have some idealism in them. Even just a desire to run a country well counts as an ideal. So there, I'm a little bit upset, friends, because me, as an arch-realist, I'm being accused by Blair, my wish for sensible government is being called idealist by Blair. Pretty upset about that, but let's continue. Contrary to what most electorates think, all this time I've been an idealist because I dream of an actual sensible government. Contrary to what most electorates think, most of the time, the majority of people in politics go into it to try to do good. Naturally, they don't always succeed, but that's another matter. Being motivated by principle, by strong values, a sense of purpose, these are great qualities and necessary for the political game if it is to be played well. Ideals are a live hand measuring achievement by what is achieved. Ideology is a dead hand measuring achievement by obedience to doctrine and dogma. Ideology is not even a governing political philosophy. It is unfortunately too rigid for that. It is a conviction that only a certain way or a certain set of policies or a certain set of fixed attitudes have validity and should prevail. The appeal of ideology is that it promises to effect not just any change, but radical change. And at a time of deep frustration with conventional systems and their outcomes, this appeal runs out of the fringes and in to mainstream politics. For the ideologue, being radical is paramount, even at odds with being practical. People who are practical are considered at best technocratic and at worst humdrum or even boring. No one ever captivated a street demonstration with a placard reading, "Be practical." But practical and radical should not be alternatives in competition with each other. They should be complementary. Classic Blair sentence, that. Radical, in the context of governing, means fundamental change. Systematic change. Change that alters the rules of the game. But if it's not practical, it won't work. Big problems require big solutions. But the emphasis should be on the word solution as much as on the word big. And then he talks on about technology. I'm going to skip over this bit where he talks about tech. But he says, in time, these tech innovations will eclipse the 20th century ideological battle between state and market, capital and labour, and at least alter the background against which debates over globalism or nationalism are conducted. When I think of the countries doing well today, says Blair, they have done so by sound analysis, careful evaluation of the evidence, painstaking construction of policy, and then have made change which is far-reaching based on what the evidence tells them will yield the desired consequence. And this is where I thought this was really interesting, because his example is China. China's former leader, Deng Xiaoping, is a fascinating study on many levels, says Blair, dripping with admiration for the former leader of the CCP. More than anyone else, he was responsible for opening his country up and creating the conditions for its extraordinary economic progress. He did so in the aftermath of the brutal ideological nightmare of the Cultural Revolution, in which a version of Maoist ideology gripped the country with disastrous effects. Deng himself was arrested, exiled, his family persecuted, yet somehow he re-emerged to lead what became increasingly a frontal assault on the very notion that ideology could or should distort an objective assessment of reality. The words he used to persuade the Chinese Communist Party to change course so dramatically still resonate today, says Blair. Contrary to the CCP doctrine, and actually much of Chinese history, he asserted that China had to learn from others, in particular the West, from Western education to Western science and technology. He described the process of policy reformulation as, quote, seeking truth from facts and proceeding from reality. To do that, he argued, people had to, quote, emancipate their minds. Rather than vain boasts about how wonderful things were in China, he emphasized instead China's relative poverty and backwardness. It was a remarkable and transformative message. And he followed it up in what he called integrating theory with practice, delivering fundamental reforms and changes to China's economy and system that set the country on a path to future prosperity and power. His life, prior to being leader, capital L leader, by the way, was a testament to the damage ideology can do. His leadership, once he assumed power, was a testament to what an enlightened, capital L, leader, free from the constraints of ideology, can achieve. A leader, and what's fascinating about this is that just as when you read Machiavelli's The Prince, he says, oh, well, Borgia, he was a great, you know, Cesare Borgia, he was a great leader type thing. Blair is going through and saying, yeah, Deng is the one. He is a really great leader that, you know, people need to emulate in the West now. Very interesting. He says, a leader, even if they come to office with support that is ideological in nature, would do well in power to govern according to what works, what will produce change that is real, not fit the policy to the ideology, but, even if quietly, discard the ideology in favour of the answer, the practical answer. Stimulate and stir the emotions of the people, of course. That is part of political leadership. If you want to succeed, be that radical with the head and heart in healthy combination. That's the end of the chapter. Now, several interesting things about this, which is that for most people, they'd be thinking, yeah, but Tony Blair, you do have an ideology. You are a neoliberal and a neoconservative, and you do seem almost pathologically, ideologically committed to those two things. But reading this book, this was one of those moments where I was thinking, like, well, China's not a democracy. It's not a liberal democracy. It's not even liberal. It's basically, you know, what you might describe elsewhere as a totalitarian state. It is a very much a top-down system. And obviously Deng, you know, he made his reforms and he made his changes and so on, but he still did it top-down. He didn't do it by opening up elections. And Blair just kind of sidesteps all of that and just says, like, yeah, well, that worked. Deng worked. So it made me think, and throughout this book, this is a reoccurring theme, it just made me think, Blair doesn't really seem to have that much time for kind of back and forth debates, politics, left and right, ideology, the people, quote unquote, democracy, liberalism. All of these are just completely sidestepped by Blair, and he's just like, Blair, we have to, all that's rubbish. And basically, it just made me think, is actually this what Blair and friends are aiming for? Are they seeing China as the model for the West now, on the basis that what China has done has worked? So Blair and all his friends at Davos, and, you know, is that the future they have planned for us? Because, you know, in some of the he's basically saying, like, in the future, all of the old debates about state and market and socialism and capitalism and so on, they will dissipate. And there's just a few, there's quite a few moments in the book where it's like, is Blair basically like crypto arguing for the Chinese system here in the West? Anyway, I'd be interested to know your thoughts on what Blair has been said, what Blair says in that little passage there, and on his thinking in general. just a few other things. I do think that ideology is can be a straitjacket or a dead end in the way that Blair outlines there. And I do think it's important for people to think of practical, rather than just say, point to like the blob or, you know, the deep state or whatever, actually coming up with practical, workable solutions to the issues. You know, I've had a few goes myself. I suggested, for example, a Rwanda plus plus plus, or my Madagascar plan, if you remember, as a way of dealing with mass immigration as an issue and getting around the Geneva Convention. So, you know, every once in a while I have a little go at thinking about solutions to these complex problems. But in general, I would love to see more realism and more, you know, thinking about what is it that actually works, rather than just rabble-rousing. Because, you know, if I look at somebody like Farage, who is a populist, who does play on people's grievances, I don't see him providing actual solutions. I see him benefiting from the problems. I don't actually see him delivering the change that people want to see in this country. And really what we need is almost like a Tony Blair on our side. Somebody like a Tony Blair, just on our side of things. I just don't see that in reform. Dominic Cummings could be that sort of person, in theory, or somebody like that. But that's really what needs to happen. All right, that'll do. See ya. Have a good weekend, everyone, and I'll see you next week. Pick up a course. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.